going to try and use an illustration, so in a second I'll show it to you, but I think it's a cool illustration, and you'll see why at the end of it I'm going to show it to you again. And it's one of these great art illustrations from a point of view. So let's just see if this thing's working properly. Here we go. Press play. Didn't work? Oh, that's disappointing for all of us on many levels. Oh no, I know. Oh well. That's a shame, isn't it? I'll just describe it to you. It's by a guy who's doing a thing for Tesla. I don't know whether you know Nikola Tesla. And what they actually did was you're going to have to go and see this now. They got everyday objects like TVs, and they got fridges, and they got broken bits of things which are used around the house, and they place them. And it's really, really obscure, because when you're looking at it, it's going to start by looking at the TVs. You're going to, great, we're looking at a TV, so what? But then as it pulled back and span around and then got to this point here and looked at the objects, each and every bit of those household objects made up the face of Nikola Tesla. And so as long as you're standing here and here exactly and looking at that, you could see his whole face. But when you move to this side here, you'd see an old TV and an old fridge. And you'd move back. Oh, there we go. Look at that. See, washing machines, all sorts of stuff. Oh, there he is. Don't worry, we'll see him again. And so it comes back to, isn't that amazing? We'll show that again. Here we go. Hopefully we'll show that again. Thanks, Scott. Did well the first time. You see all the different bits of the household objects? But sit at the right position. And suddenly what the artist is trying to create comes out. And so suddenly you can see the face of Nikola Tesla. Incredible, isn't it? The first thing I want us to take away is all these signs that Jesus talks about are only going to mean any hope of us understanding them if we're standing at the right position to see them. Otherwise, things will happen and we'll just see them as TV sets or old washing machines. We just won't recognize them. You've got to be in the right position to have any hope whatsoever of recognizing these signs. So just as that illustration showed you, standing at the right point is the key to even having a hope of understanding what Jesus is talking about. You have to be at the right place at the right time. Now, my proposition is this, that there were many prophecies about the coming of Jesus Christ, the coming of the Messiah. And those prophecies, we can see backwards and go, oh, they seemed fairly clear. Why did no one listen to them? But unfortunately, most people didn't listen to them. Some people did pick them up. Some were at the right place at the right time. Let me just get onto my script here. Sorry about all over the place. There we go. It'll work eventually. We'll get there. There we are. Great. Now, for those of us who are more au fait with our Bible, we'll record that in Luke, it tells about Jesus' earthly parents taking him to the temple after his 8 days, and he's met by two different people. He's met by Simeon and he's met by Anna. And it says, if we read in Luke, it says that Simeon was prompted by the Holy Spirit and he goes to the temple, and he'd been told that he would not die before he saw the hope of Israel coming before him. And he sees Jesus and he goes and prophesies over him. And then Anna, a godly lady who had been widowed and now spent her whole life at the temple worshipping and doing things there, also comes at this point and sees the child and does the same. And so we've got these two witnesses in the temple, just for those of us who know our Revelation, you get two witnesses in the temple talking about the coming Messiah. The right place at the right time. They have the right attitudes. They were making themselves available, and so they recognized what was happening, and they stated this and said, that's Jesus, we recognize him. The right place at the right time. Now, you can be at the wrong place at the right time. Herod was at the wrong place. He could have been there and he could have known everything and he could have seen all about Jesus. He had the Magi come up to him and say, listen, there's a king being born today. He could have had all the right signs shown to him, but his heart was completely wrong. Herod, sadly, his own kids and then his grandkids. So Herod and Herod Jr. and Herod the next Herod. There's tons of Herods. Each and every one of them did the same problem. They lived in momentous times and not one of them picked up on it. Why? Because even though it's the right time, they individually were at the wrong place. Some were at the right place at the right time, Anna and Simeon, the shepherds, the Magi from the east, all of them, the right place, the right time. Some are at the wrong place at the wrong time. And then there's the third group. Those group which can be at the right place, but the time is not now. But it's still the right place. And that's what I want us to be encouraged to be at the end of this message. To be standing at the right place so that when those signs do come to us, we have opportunity to recognize them. And it's only by standing at that right place you're going to have opportunity to see those signs in all the glory that Jesus wants to bring to himself. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them the food at their proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I don't want you to sit here kind of going, oh no, where's the right place? It's fairly simple. Read what God teaches about his character and respond correctly to that teaching. That puts you in the right place. It is not rocket science. You've just got to actually be humble and obedient and you're at the right place. Okay, we'll come back to that. I want to bring in Route 66. For those who know North American culture, Route 66 was the main road which went from east to west or west to east, depending which way you went, really. And it was a famous route. It got closed down, unfortunately. But it's this place where Route 66, and it's this iconic trip that people used to make from all the way across the United States of America. I mean, you can still do it by various bits. When I grew up, there's various quotes about Route 66, but the one I liked most was, it's not the destination that matters, it's the journey. And so, iconically, you would go and get yourself a Harley Davidson, jump on it, and for a biker's heart like me, I kind of think, yeah, that'd be a great sort of thing to do, wouldn't it? You jump on your Harley and plow across. Be great fun. But some clever person came up with a concept and said, actually, it's the destination which decides in which direction we'll move and what kind of experience we'll have in our journey. And so whilst that initial point is not the destination that matters, it's the journey, that's a good statement. It's not 100% accurate, really, is it? You've got to be on Route 66 to enjoy it, so the destination obviously does have some sort of implication. And in fact, they went on to say, we need to choose our destination carefully so that we can have a worthwhile journey. And so what Jesus sets out is he sets out where this journey is going to end up. He tells us what the destination is going to be. And then he says, well, make sure you're part of that journey. Now, what I want for us to understand is how important that is. If you look at actually what happens in chapter 24, Jesus leaves the temple, he's walking away, and disciples, I don't know why they decided to ask, he says, well, you know, what's going to happen to all these buildings? And so he goes and sits on the Mount of Olives, and he looks at them all and says, well, the end's going to come. Now, can you see this as he talks about all these great buildings? Now, this is the second temple, right? The first one got destroyed. They built another one. And then Herod the Great basically started trying to buy votes and buy favor by upgrading the temple. And this temple has been upgraded and it's getting bigger and more prestigious and there are all sorts of great things going on. And they're very, very proud of it. And Jesus sits there with his fledgling church and his disciples and says, you see the key city of Jerusalem, I tell you, it's going to be destroyed. Now we look back and we're 2,000 years into a church and we see all sorts of enormous things, that churches all over the place, there's half a percentage of the world claim to be Christians, whether they actually are is another thing, but you can basically wander most of the globe and find believers. He sat there with 12 disciples looking across and says, before even this gets out, before we go anywhere with this, before you get sent out to go and proclaim the kingdom of God, before my death and resurrection, before anything empowers through the Holy Ghost comes, Holy Spirit comes down and empowers the church, before any of that, I'm telling you where you're going to end up. So before we start on this, I'm telling you what's going to happen at the end. So we all know what it's going to be about. And what we don't do is we don't go trusting in these sorts of traditional ways of power. Don't look to your traditional things. Don't look to the power of the Jewish nation. Don't look to the temple as your protector. It's all going to be taken away and destroyed. Doesn't really mean that much to you and I, but to good Jewish boys, that's a huge shock. Sorry, we're about your authority and power. We're about the Jewish Messiah, and you're telling us that's all going to be destroyed? Because he wants us to understand we're not to put our trust in physical objects, special locations, special invocations, special relationships. I'm really pleased we've upgraded the church. It looks great, superb. But it isn't going to last, and we shouldn't expect it to. Now, whenever you're preparing a sermon, you basically got to say, well, what's the point of everyone coming here and listening to it? What's the benefit? I mean, if you didn't turn up today, what would you miss? Practically today, the journey together, rather than the destination, needs to be in focus for us. The destination is going to happen. He's told us what's going to happen. He's going to come back in power. How we respond to that is important. How are we going about maintaining our position of integrity in the right spot so that when the signs happen, we can recognize everything that he said? And we do that by walking as a church together to maintain the integrity not only of our collective witness, but also of our individual walking, which is why coming and gathering as a regular body is so important, because you hold each other accountable to say, are you maintaining who you are as a faithful servant? Now, I don't expect you to go to the person and go, you know, having a coffee, are you maintaining yourself as a faithful servant? You just go, how's your week going? How are you travelling? If you're really adventurous, you go, anything I can pray for you? That's how we maintain our integrity. It's dead simple. You just ask each other how you're going and encourage each other to stand in the right position so that when these signs happen, you can see the glory of God. Not rocket science. In Matthew 24, Jesus quite clearly says, hey, I don't know when this is going to happen. I know it's going to happen, but I don't know when. So stop bugging me about the day and the hour. I don't know. And we should stop worrying about it as well. It's going to happen. And if you're maintaining your position of integrity at the right point by obediently and sacrificially serving the living God, then when the signs appear, we have the best chance of recognizing them. Move off, and all you're going to see is rubbish and junk. Can you keep yourself in that position? And can we do that by walking a journey together? Are you in the right place to see the signs if they were to come today? Are you about God's business? Jesus uses illustration. He talks about Noah. Hey, you know that time in Noah, which he genuinely believes took place, by the way. He doesn't go, hey, you know that fake time when I wrote a book and no one believes anymore. He doesn't say that. He says, you know that time in Noah when Noah was instructed to go and build this big ark and no one really believed anything about him. I mean, that's a bizarre sort of thing to do, 100 years of building a boat. Anyone could have walked past, what are you doing, Noah? Building a boat. Why? Well, it's going to rain. When? Don't know exactly, but I'm building my boat. I mean, gosh, what a nutty family to be part of. But that's what he did. And any one of them could have asked, and any one of them could have said, any space for me? Nope. No one asked. There would have been space had they asked, by the way. God wasn't going to say, nah, kick everybody out. He just knew no one was going to ask. He says, you know when that time of Noah? He said everyone was just getting on with life. And then suddenly, the heavens opened. Those animals I needed saved had been locked up nicely and they were going to be saved. The humans who had been obedient were being locked up and they were going to be nice and safe. And everybody else drowned. And they had no idea. Why? Because they weren't standing in the right place. They were busy looking at rubbish and got distracted. But if you're in the right spot and obediently serving God, then when the signs come, you've got the best opportunity of recognizing them. It's going to be like that. So don't get distracted. Be ready. This isn't a passage where Jesus goes, hey, look at me, I'm powerful. This is a passage that Jesus is honestly trying to tell his fledgling church before they even make one move. I'm trying to help you as believers to stay faithful to who I am. Don't put your trust in edifices and institution. Symbolically, he leaves the temple for the last time. He's making it clear that even though it's wonderful and powerful, it's only temporary. We shouldn't be beguiled by its beauty. I love watching some of these, you know, housing refurbishment places or grand designs and seeing all these wonderful things that people create. And they are incredible places, but at the end of them, I actually get quite sad because I kind of go, you just watch how much time and effort people throw into building a house. Now, we all need houses to live in, that's great. But if you put time and effort to your whole, to the exclusion of everything else, you've made a god of it, haven't you? And this is the problem. We can get distracted by institutions, we can get distracted by places, we can get distracted by our own garden if you're gardeners, distracted by your jobs, distracted by family. It's too easy to get knocked off center. And the thing which holds us back there is a community of faith which is willing to be accountable and hold each other accountable. It's a two-way street. What matters is people live godly lives. Well, he says, listen, these things are going to happen. There's going to be wars. At the moment, according to the internet, there's over 33 active wars or type of wars going on. And so they have things like civil wars. Well, obviously, we know the big one at the moment, the Russia-Ukrainian war. Insurgencies, terrorists, drug wars, civil wars, ethnic violence. And a war is defined as something, an activity which kills more than 1,000 people per year in its activity. If it doesn't kill 1,000 people, it doesn't even get referenced as a war. Over 33 of them going on at this as we speak. So you'll hear wars and rumours of wars. Well, there's tons of those going on. Sadly, there's famines. There's earthquakes. There's earthquakes happening around Melbourne at the moment. They're all over the place, aren't they? You know, there's one going off there. I mean, are we waking up going, oh no, Melbourne, earthquakes? Probably not. But there are earthquakes going on. These things are going to happen, but do not be alarmed. He says what's going to happen is there's going to false prophets are going to appear. And they're going to say, listen, I'm the Christ. And you kind of go, it's just ridiculous. But it's happened. There's numerous people have come up and said, I'm the Christ. And people have followed them. Seems absurd. But Jesus predicted it. It's happened. And people get distracted from them. There'll be false prophets saying, this is what you need to be doing, teaching you things which are not of the Bible, adding bits on, detracting bits off, saying it's okay to go and do this when the Bible quite clearly says, no, it's not. There'll be those false messiahs who come and say, I'm the one who really knows what it might be. I'm the messiah you're after. False prophets and false messiahs. But sadly, he says, there'll be real persecution. If you're going to follow Jesus, if you're going to follow me, he says, you will find yourself persecuted. Do not be caught off guard. And then he says, and one of the biggest problems is going to happen is, one of the big problems you're going to have is falling off the love that you have, because you're going to move off point because of this great persecution. If you're not aware and you're not ready, then when it happens to you, you'll get knocked off center, and the love that you have will grow cold and will fade. The famous story about this is D.L. Moody, the great preacher. He was visiting someone in Chicago when the idea of church membership and involvement came up. And this person said to Moody, I believe I can just be as good a Christian outside the church as I can be inside it. Moody responded by saying nothing, but moved to the fireplace. The fireplace was blazing against the winter outside, and he removed one of the burning coals and placed it just in front of the fire. And the two men sat and watched together as the ember died out. I see, said the other man. Maintaining your fire and integrity of following Christ is always going to be stronger in a community of faith which honors God. Trying to do it solo is not only contrary to what God teaches, it's contrary to the blessing he wants us to have by being with one another. It's contrary to his word. The idea of a solo Christian when they could be part of a community of faith is an oxymoron. It's just simply arrogance and disobedience. Let's not give up meeting together, even when it gets difficult. I mean, it's easy when it's nice and warm and there's everything okay. But when the threat of persecution comes, when your name's possibly upon a list and turning up to someone's house means that you might be turned in and got out by the authorities, then it becomes dangerous. But God says that's what we do, and that's how we get through it, and that's how we stay on point. So whilst there is false prophets and false messiahs and fading love, we do actually have a true objective, God's business. Matthew 24 is just a classic position. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. A.B. Simpson, a guy I've read a lot of and have a great deal of respect and time for, he looked at that particular verse and he looked at it and said, hey, listen, if I reverse that, if I preach to the whole world about the gospel of Jesus, once I've done that job, the end will come. He actually saw it as a way of bringing the end, bringing the return of Christ by going, right, all I've got to do, I mean, this is how he thought, all I've got to do is preach to the whole world and then Jesus will come. And until I've done that, he won't. I mean, that's a logical deduction, isn't it? And so he set up a mission society and he got on with preaching to the whole world. And that's what they did. And that's what they're still doing. And that's what we're part of, whether we're part of the one he set up or part of the Baptist society. Our response is to say, let's take the gospel to all nations in a meaningful manner. I've spoken about this before. It's not just lobbing a Bible in their direction. In a meaningful manner, which they understand in their heart language and in their heart methodology. And then Jesus will come. So not only are we sat here and maintaining this position so that we can see the signs when they appear and we're being obedient and faithful, but we're doing that with an active waiting, which seems to be an oxymoron again, but it's an active waiting. It's not like, you know, dozing off. We're about God's business, even though those signs may not turn up in our lifetime. Now, I've got to admit, since 1945 with Hiroshima and Nagasaki, things changed. Prior to that time, most wars would have affected people. Of course they did, but we didn't think they had opportunity to wipe out the whole world like that. We all know differently. But even that fear should not drive us off point. That should actually focus us laser-like and say, let's get on with things. Let's start taking this message of hope that we have, that even when this world is destroyed and gone, there is a hope of a future which we want others to be part of as much as we are being blessed by being part of it now. So what does Jesus say? Well, people are going to come in and say, I'm the Christ, I'm over here. And prophets are going to come around and say, no, he's the Christ and he's over there. And he says, sometimes he says he's going to be over there in a field. And some say, no, he's going to be going in a room over here. He says, no. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'll tell you how it's going to happen. It's going to be physical. I'm coming back. It'll be visible. Like lightning across the sky, we're all going to know about it. And I'll be in absolute power. I'll gather the elect, and we will be in that position we've all desired to see. I mean, we can go into Revelation if you want to later and see all the various descriptions. But the upshot is that he is coming. It will be a physical representation. He will be visible to all, and he'll be in absolute power. He will be gainsaid by nobody. So before he starts his church, he gets his disciples and he looks and he says, everything which you looked to before as the Jewish nation centered around that place, the temple, that's all changing. The person you center around is me. Stay on target. walk that route together, be your ecclesia, your church, your community of faith, and take the hope that you have by being obediently waiting, and take that message, and then we'll see that end coming. And can I encourage us today, make sure that's what we're doing, that we're walking Route 66 together. We're encouraging one another, we're looking out for one another, we're being accountable to one another, and we're holding people to account. Let's do that to maintain this position so that when and if these signs come, we will recognize them and be encouraged. But as we're doing this, we're speaking to others about the hope that we have so that they can be blessed and know what's going to happen as much as we expect and know what's going to happen in the future as well. Thank you.